It's always fun when we get to say hello to Vince Ferrara, as this hour is brought to you by Waters Equipment. Vince, how are you?
I'm good. Good to see both of you in person again.
How was the trip home, and how was the birthday?
Both were outstanding.
Wonderful.
Tampa was Tampa. It was warm. There was some lightning and thunder to be had.
So unlike Tampa.
That's right. Humidity. Took the sweet mini golden doodle Daphne down for the trip. She struggled a little bit with some motion sickness on the drive down. That was not fun. But did better on the drive back, and everybody in the family loved on her. So that was a good experience. And as some of you may have seen on social media, lots of delicious, amazing Mama Ferrara's cooking.
So, yeah, love the light lunch.
That's right. There's multiple courses of just a light meal, and it's like you feel there's a level of guilt because you know mom has gone to great lengths to prepare this food. You don't know how you're going to intake it all, but it tastes so good. So you have to pace yourself. And I always think she's not offended if I don't eat it all at one time, even though she'll encourage me to, because you know there's always food around. It's not going anywhere. There, in an Italian household, it is always there. But
kind of like a cruise.
This is true. it's the buffet without the public being there, which is a plus. It's all yours. You just have to fight with family members. But I actually lost a few pounds in Florida.
There you go.
Some of that is knowing what you're going to eat a lot. So I hit the gym almost every day. And then you sweat it off, too, because there's heat index of 107 a couple of days.
Did that upset Mama Ferrari that you lost weight?
No.
She just wants... She's going to think you're not eating.
No. She knows what I mean. Yeah. But no, it was great to see family, obviously. And birthday was good. Went axe throwing. Never done that before.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of our listeners... That was a lot of fun.
How'd you do?
I did, according to everybody I went with, my brother-in-law and everyone, amazing, 12 bullseyes. First time I'd ever done it. And so I got to the championship game, and they changed it. John, this might make you mad. Hopefully it does, because you're a baseball guy. All right, I'm in the we did like all individuals down to two. And once you lose a one-on-one matchup, you lose your first life. Second time you're defeated, you're out. So it's kind of like College World Series a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's double elimination, basically. So we get down to me, who's basically undefeated, two of the people that lost once. They redid the format to where the two that had one loss, instead of playing each other to get down to one person to face me and have to beat me twice, which is the normal thing you do, they had each of them play me once. And I beat the first one, and then the second one beat me, and they made that the championship game.
Just made that the championship game.
And
it's the SEC bias.
And got a title belt, too. Would have been a sweet, like, wrestling-style belt.
Yeah.
And because they didn't keep it a double elimination, I didn't get the title. So,
a little mix of Hoover. Well, it's only double elimination for this period of time, right. And then it's winner take all. But it sounds like you had a blast.
It was a lot of fun. So hope you guys had a good rest of summer before it all dives in here now, starting, I guess, today.
Yeah, big thumbs up. And let's get to today. It was the opportunity to hear from Tennessee's head coach and its two coordinators with offense and defense. But why don't we start with the players? Who did you like talking to the most out of the group that you got to catch up with?
Wow. Well, I bounced around to all 11. So there was a few that I talked to exclusively, but I bounced around to all 11. All of them were very interesting. I think we've seen sort of the I don't want to say maturity, but the development in talking to the media of Theo Jackson. Theo Jackson used to be very timid with the media and felt, I don't know, handcuffed a little bit. Maybe that was under the Pruitt regime of what he could say. He probably was the most informative of the players that I talked to in being willing to talk about, you know, the differences in positions. And now this defense is a little bit easier. I know you had a similar question for Matthew Butler, maybe not as complicated rather than easy, but he talked about that a little bit. And then also the transition to this defense and how they want to do things versus what they did before, and just his role in it, and wanting to play fast versus having some things that are, you know, hiding your schemes and maybe keeping the offense off balance. So I thought he was fun to talk to. Cade Mays stood up, so that was different. And he stood up the entire time, and I asked him, who's the nastiest offensive lineman other than yourself, of course?
Cooper.
That was one of the guys he named. He said Carvin, Spraggs, Javonte Spraggins, and his brother. So those are his three answers. But Jacob Warren, always really good, so well-spoken. You can tell he's a leader. And Jimmy, I thought it was very, very interesting, similar to what we heard from a lot of players around the league at SEC Football Media Days. A number of the players talking about not getting too much into name, image, and likeness because they wanted to focus on this season. Did you hear the same thing?
I did. And then and with Brandon Warren, it was like, you know, if the players can go out and make money, there's not going to be any jealousy about that. We understand that, but we don't want them to lose focus on what's important, that's playing football. I thought Butler's comment, I asked him about Rodney Garner, and he praised Garner about being a great defensive line coach. And I said, well, did it affect your play last year when your defensive line coach gets fired after four games and then your head coach becomes your defensive line coach? And he went through a litany of about seven different people that have been his coach.
Yeah.
and he started mentioning, I'm like, oh, I forgot about that guy. But he went through, you know, this guy, Brady Hoke, blah, blah, blah. And so, but then he said that the defensive line will be the most improved group on the football team, which tells me that the coaching last year did have an impact on their performance.
Right.
And he's confident that this will be the most improved group because of having Rodney Garner.
Yeah, that's interesting because Butler's always one that he doesn't want to separate. He doesn't want to throw anyone under the bus. But that kind of slipped through a little bit, that you can read between the lines, mm-hmm. as to, and he even one time caught himself. He was like, you know, when there's some issues, don't take that the wrong way.
Yeah, don't run with that.
Probably too late, Matthew. It's already on Twitter, I'm sure. But he's always very well spoken. He's going to be a regular that we talk to. I think a lot of the guys we saw today were guys we're going to hear from a lot this year. But I really like the fact that they put all four quarterbacks out there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not pretend this isn't the biggest story in a big-time competition. And I don't think any of them really ran from that. I didn't sense anyone feeling like they were behind in the race. It seems like a lot of those guys are good. I think Harrison Bailey, you'd mentioned, was asked about Milton. He said, you know, look, I think he seems to be a great guy, but, you know, he came in late, so we really haven't been able to fully develop a relationship. So, you know, a lot of the players it was good to talk to some of the new guys like a Joe Milton. I hadn't talked to Hendon Hooker. Some of those guys, it was good to hear from them.
I asked Hooker, I said, look, you were the first quarterback to take snaps in the spring game. So do you feel like you were the one the job, or you were the number one quarterback in the spring? He said, no. He said, they just happened to call me to go out there first. But he said, I didn't feel like I won the job.
Yeah.
But so and there's still a lot to be about going forward. I asked him about the urgency comment that Alex Golish, the offensive coordinator, made about the urgency of the position. He said, look, if you're the quarterback, you know, you shouldn't be thinking about urgency. You should be the best you can be from day one,
mm-hmm.
and then go from there, he said. And he was but I thought that he might, because he was the first quarterback that took snaps in the spring game, I thought he might say, well, yeah, I was number one guy. He didn't go there. He sees it as an open competition, at least publicly. He sees it that way.
One interesting thing that Joe Milton said, and maybe it was a little bit of slip or he didn't intend to phrase it this way, but he was talking about some of the off-season work, and he said, yeah, you know, a lot of watching tape, you know, when I'm at home, even if I don't feel like watching tape, I watch tape. So I don't know if you want to put out there that you don't like watching tape, but, I mean, at least he's doing it. So that is a positive. But coaches oftentimes want guys that just – can't get enough, the love it, mm-hmm. especially at that position. But I didn't get to see him standing up, Jimmy. I don't know if you did, Joe Milton, mm-hmm. but you hear about how big he is. You look at his size, and he looked big sitting in that seat. But I wish I would have had a chance to see him standing up just to see how imposing it is.
Brandon Warren, and I don't know that you had heard this,
Jacob.
But yeah, Jacob Warren said, what was your first impression when you saw Joe Milton? He said, man, that is a big dude. And somebody said, what position did you think he played? He said, I'm not going to get into that. I don't want to disrespect him. Which made me think he thought he was like a defensive lineman.
Well, here's the height and weight of those two. Jacob Warren, 6'6", 251. Joe Milton, 6'5", 244. Not a whole lot of difference between the two. One's a tight end and one is a quarterback. Actually, Warren now is 6'6", 246. So there's only 2 pounds difference between the two.
Yeah, and Warren said he reported at 206. He's gained 40 pounds right. Since his freshman year at Tennessee.
Yeah.
Let's get a call from Jim. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Well, Vince, welcome back.
Thank you, Jim.
I was wondering, is it possible to find Mama Ferrara's line of Italian food in my grocery store?
Oh, that's a subject from many a night at the dinner table where a lot of us wish that we would have found a way to, you know, through the years to get a business out of it and how much money we could have made had we gone that direction. But, you know.
Name, image, and likeness for mamas.
That's right.
It sounds great, I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you specifically this question, Vince, and then I'll throw out my second question for anybody. You know, with Texas and Oklahoma coming in, and I've heard so many different opinions, and everybody's got an opinion as far as what the new model is going to be or what they want it to be with a 16-team league. What are the... When you see this thing finally come in at 16-team, what are the factors that are most important to you when they decide on the model? And do you have a preference in terms of a model, be it sticking with divisions or going to pods or neither one of those, something different from either one of those? What's your thoughts on all that?
It's a great question, Jim. I think the most important thing for me is that the student athletes, the players get a chance to experience as many different opponents during their time in college. And maybe you do two permanent opponents and then everybody else rotates. And that would be argument against doing the divisions. And then you open it all up. I mean, 16 is a lot to have no divisions. I get that. But that would be a way, and then you just keep rotating, and if you think about it, you could almost, John, not only see every team in the league, but you may be able to get to every venue if you have seven rotating opponents every year. What do you think?
Yeah, I do think you could do it very similar to basketball, and that is have just a handful of permanent opponents, if mm-hmm. that many. I mean, you might just have two, your in-state and mm-hmm. one other. So I do think that, yeah, you could rock it through the schedule pretty quick in terms of if you played 4 years, you would have an opportunity to have played at every venue and hosted every team.
And that has been missing for a long time. So I think, and then what you'd also do with that is you have the two best teams in your conference title game, rather than maybe if you split divisions and you have 8-8, maybe one, you have one clear team, and then maybe the rest of the division isn't as good that year, so they maybe had an easier path to that title game, whereas the other division may be stacked in a given year. And so that there's that imbalance. If you eliminate the divisions, maybe you just get the two best teams. So I think it would be that. But the SEC isn't – I don't know that they're going to look at it that way. They're going to try to figure out a way that best helps them for the college football playoff and getting as many teams in there.
One thing about if you don't have divisions, then instead of finishing fifth in your division, you finish 10th in the SEC. Right. That doesn't sound good.
No.
You're fired.
Well, that's what the coaches will say. The coaches don't have a say in a lot of this. It's happening. It's a way above.
I mentioned that. I think to Jim's call, I prefer two 8-team divisions, mm-hmm. and you play 9 games, and then right. you play each of the other two opponents in the other division, 2-2-2-2. So over a 4-year period, you've played everybody.
Right.
The other question quickly, how does this decision get made? Is it a athletic director vote? Is it the commissioner saying, here's what I'd like to do, can we do this? Or do the presidents get involved? How does this actually get finalized and done?
It's my experience that it's the commissioner, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to convince the ADs and the presidents to do it. Yep. That's what I see. Mm-hmm. I saw it out of Mike's live, and I think I'm seeing it out of Greg Sankey, too.
Yep. So I think it will be something to see. And also, as much as what do you do with the 16 teams, how long does it stay 16, as we were talking just yesterday?
Yeah.
So are there more on the way? And if so, how many? At some point in time, you have to cap it or just change drastically what your object is from one fall to the next. But, Jim, always appreciate it. Our guest, Vince Ferrara, this hour brought to you by Waters Equipment. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900.
Vince, what did you think of the offensive coordinator, Alex Golish, indicating there is a sense of urgency and that he would like to have somebody narrow it down to two quarterbacks the first 10 to 14 days, yet the head coach didn't seem to talk about that sense of urgency like the offense coordinator did.
Yes, I was surprised he actually threw that out there. It is a little bit different, but he's very well aware it is Josh Heupel's call on one that actually takes place. I read that as where his comfort level would be in getting that. That would be a timetable to start paring down the reps, and I forget what the phrase was, but pouring on the reps, I think he might have said after that, when you start paring it down. Clearly, they've had to do two quarterback systems in the past or playing two quarterbacks, not necessarily all the time. So it's something that they would do if they need to, but I think you have to at least get it down to two. And that's kind of the timeline I was honestly thinking about, Jimmy, before today, was, you know, a week or two max. And they just, you just don't have enough time with those players. And then when you're splitting it up four ways, it's just not realistic. The question is who are the two? And what would be your answer, Jimmy?
Well, I've already said I think Harrison Bailey will be the starter. Because I think he's the most accurate passer, even though Alex Golish would not acknowledge who the most accurate passer is.
You tried.
I tried.
And then you tried to get the arm strength.
Yeah, and he wouldn't go there. Josh Heupel. No, I'm not buying that. So I'm going to go Harrison Bailey, and then I'm going to go Joe Milton.
Those would be my two right now.
And I say that because, I mean, now we had Rick Neuheisel on, and he said the reason that Milton lost a job in Michigan is because he was unable to read defenses. Okay. Mm-hmm. But you hear from the coaching staff how bright Milton is. So maybe it was the Michigan system that maybe he had difficulty with, and maybe this system better suits him. I don't know. But his athletic is big, the great arm. Look, he's got the best arm on the team. I think that's pretty evident, even though people didn't want to not necessarily go public with that and talk about it. So I think it's between those two. That's what I would think. And then I thought Golish was kind of interesting. He said he would like to not name the quarterback until game day, but he wasn't sure he could keep that quiet around here.
Then he was pretty certain of that.
Yeah.
Actually. Now, I thought it was interesting, too, when I asked Golish about Milton specifically, he kept mentioning the arm strength. I mean, he might have done it like three or four times during his answer. So that tells me that that is one of the biggest skills he brings to the table, and then also how big he is as well, kind of to what we were talking about earlier.
And so with Hendon Hooker, it'll be interesting to see. I asked him what he can take from Virginia Tech to help him at Tennessee, and he said experience. He started games. He played in games. He did want to come play in the SEC, even though some of the relationships he had with people when he came here are no longer here. But he talked about having played at Virginia Tech, and he thinks that can benefit him. And he said he loves this up-tempo offense. He said they ran some of it at Virginia Tech, but not consistently at a high octane like they do here. And Brian Maurer, to me, is kind of the odd man out. I think he's a good athlete, and he's got a nice arm. He just, when we watched him, he just made too many mistakes. And I say we, I'm talking about the whole everybody watched Tennessee football games. He would he just kept throwing to the wrong jersey. He did too often. So his decision making is what I would have difficulty with.
Well, remember the talk last year was that during the spring practices, not last year, but during in the spring, that Maurer probably looked the best of the quarterbacks that were here this spring. But then he didn't start the spring game and didn't get a ton of run with the first team. And when he did, there wasn't great success there. Harrison Bailey ended up getting the most with the first team, and he had the most success. So you came out of the spring game thinking Harrison Bailey, whereas everyone talked about Maurer's probably throwing the ball the best prior to that. So maybe that doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things, but he kind of looked like he may have put himself back in the mix. But now with the addition of Milton and what we saw from Bailey in the spring game and what we've heard of him from a leadership standpoint in the summer, I like what he had to say. He had a sort of a different energy and vibe to him today. And so I think maybe it is Maurer that maybe has drifted back into last out of the quarterback race with Hooker maybe third.
He gives you a running threat that Bailey doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that Bailey is better at protecting the ball. I think he's more accurate. I think he's the most accurate passer they had. I just wanted to hear a coach say it. But
right.
I think he is the most accurate, and I think that's huge in this system. And the quick decision-making, too.
And the consistency. They kept Heupel and Gullish kept coming back to consistency in processing the information. And I agree with you. I think that's where it might lean a little bit towards Bailey, unless Milton has made a big jump since Michigan.
To join us on Sports Talk, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Our guest, Vince Ferrara, is this hour brought to you by Waters Equipment. And Vince, the NBA draft took place last week. We saw two Vols go for just the second time in the history of the program, two go in the first round. What did you think of the landing spots for Keon Johnson with the L.A. Clippers when all was said and done, and Jaden Springer to the Philadelphia 76ers?
Well, Keon went a little bit lower than what a lot of people may have thought based on those mock drafts that are out. And of course, those a lot of times won't be, or sometimes won't be accurate. I think it was in the range of Jaden Springer. So there might have been some disappointment as to, you know, the number at 21 that Keon Johnson went. But look, I think the Clippers are a high-level team, and a team that will, as long as they stay together, for the most part, with Kawhi Leonard, they're going to compete for an NBA championship. So you want to be a part of that. I think he's in a better situation than he would have been with the Knicks. You know, the Knicks are a playoff team, so it's not like they were during their struggles, but I think it's a good spot out there with the Clippers. And then, going into the draft, there was late you started to hear that there's a wide range of what opinions were on Keon Johnson. Mm-hmm. Some really loved him, and then some really had some hesitation. So that's the way the board played out, but I think he ended up in a great spot. And then, obviously, with Jaden Springer going to Philadelphia, he gets to be coached by Doc Rivers, has another VFL there, and Tobias Harris that can kind of show him the way. I don't worry about Springer in terms of how he handles himself as a pro, but I think it's a nice spot. Who knows what that roster ultimately will look like, John, depending on what they may do with Ben Simmons, though.
Yeah, and you also have an opportunity for Summer League tryout with E. Pons, as he's going to be competing for the Memphis Grizzlies. They've got a combination of guys that played on their team as well as for their G League affiliate. And so E. Pons gets to head to Salt Lake City.
Yeah, I think that's a great opportunity for him. And he's one of those guys, if he can have a good summer, he's going to show off his athleticism. And people are going to be like, whoa, this guy is different. So if he can sort of work his way and carve out a defensive role, then make some three-point shots, that's so he's not a total liability offensively. That's how you stick on a roster. And I think you'll see him continue to get better. The key for him is to stick initially because it's really tough once you start bouncing around, maybe internationally and G League. You can come back up to that path, but I'd like to see him show off early, get on a roster, and then just constantly put in the work till he gets his minutes.
And it's still processing, but did at least in my mind, but did I see right? Josh Richardson is now in Boston with Grant Williams?
Yes.
How crazy is that?
It is insane.
Yeah, because I can't figure out why all of a sudden Josh Richardson can't find a home. It took a while for Tobias Harris to find one,
yeah.
But you just look at somebody who works as hard as he possibly can, and it didn't work out in Philadelphia. He goes to Dallas. I thought it was a strong addition for the Mavericks, but now on the move again. What do you think in terms of him having three separate addresses in the last, now, 2 years?
Yeah, and he can really defend, which is right. What all the coaches covet. I think when you get guys that are in the middle of the roster, a lot of times those seem to be the most movable pieces. He doesn't have an inordinately big contract, and he is a guy that you feel like, all right, well, we can find another guy that can do a little bit of everything versus one guy with irreplaceable skills. So I think that's kind of where he falls. And maybe that's why he's moved. I don't think it's anything he has done or, you know, being unhappy and voicing it or anything like that. But, man, Boston, I think they covet those versatile guys like that. So maybe this will be a spot where he can get some traction, dig his heels in there, and win with another VFL in Grant Williams.
Yeah, so now when it's Boston-Philly, you've got a pair of VFLs on each side of that floor.
How about that? They'll face each other a lot.
And then you also have some other summer league opportunities for VFLs. You've got working with Indiana. You've got, I guess, Jordan Bone. You have Jordan Bowden with Brooklyn, which was the franchise. He was with their G League team last year. And then Admiral Schofield gets an opportunity with Atlanta.
Yeah, I'd like to see Admiral come out of that group. I think he might be the most likely of that, those three. You know, he had some struggles in Washington. The shots weren't falling for him. Didn't watch him on a night-in, night-out basis when he got an opportunity, but there were some of those games where he was minus a lot in the plus-minus, and the shot-making was at a much higher level at Tennessee, and I know it's a different game. I just wonder if he, being on the perimeter a lot, if he's sort of fallen into that tweener type of role in the NBA and not able to take advantage of guys in the paint and getting to the basket like he was so good at on the college level. So we'll see if there's an answer for him. You know, he's going to put in the work and he wants it bad. So I wouldn't doubt that guy, and maybe he'll be the one to rise up. And if he does, it's an awfully good Atlanta team, as we saw in the playoffs with a star in Trae Young.
To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900.
Vince, do you think Eve Pons can play in the NBA?
I think it's possible, and there's some defense primary guys in the league. I don't think he's going to be a starter in the NBA, but I think he can be an off-the-bench defensive role player that, if he can develop his three-point shot, can give you that, maybe, you know, occasionally do something off the dribble. But I think because he is so special of an athlete and so good defensively, and he works at it, I don't think he just rests on that athleticism and wants to just put on a dunk show. He's not that kind of player. If he can just improve his three-point shooting some and occasionally pop some three-pointers when he's in the game, because teams are going to leave him open on the other end, I think he can be effective in a regular sort of second team type of role. But I don't see him as an NBA starter.
Can he be like P.J. Tucker?
Well, Tucker has been doing it for so long. He's so good. Tucker is
a very good defensive player that's a marginal three-point shooter.
I want to say Tucker is bigger than Pons.
Oh, okay. I didn't think he was.
Maybe he's just more stout. Maybe he's just, you know, his different type of frame. But I see Tucker in the paint a little bit more than Pons. Just, you know, his late in his time at Tennessee or his last year, and I just kind of see him probably falling into a little bit more of a perimeter role in the NBA, where Tucker sometimes has to really battle in the paint as an undersized big.
Who's more NBA ready to come in maybe as a rookie and have the bigger impact, Keon Johnson or Jaden Springer?
Jaden Springer, I think. Keon Johnson's is raw, and I think Springer's offense came on a little bit later than Keon's did, but I still think he's more advanced. He's got the mid-range game. He just has such a great feel around the basket, and Keon's athleticism is just out of this world. But the shooting, even though he can score, I think there's the shooting and there's sort of those intangibles offensively that I think still needs some developing. Springer, to me, is a matter of body and then being even more of a dog defensively. So I think it's Springer, and I haven't studied what their roster might look like for next year fully just to see position and who might have a better chance. But I do think Springer is more NBA ready. Is that who you would say?
Well, yeah, because I thought you were going to go Johnson just because he was drafted higher.
Right.
But Johnson's got two things working against him. He's not a very good ball handler. He's not a very good shooter.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say he can't get there, and I think his upside in the NBA is higher than Springer's. But I think Springer is more ready because he's a better shooter and a better ball handler.
Yeah, and he had to play some point at Tennessee. That's not where you would project game in, game out, but sometimes you have to move around the ones and the twos, and different guys handle the ball in the NBA, and guys are going to come after you defensively, so you have to be able to handle that rock.
Hour number two of Sports Talk, final segment for us with Vince Ferrara. This hour brought to you by Waters Equipment. And Vince, as we talk about the draft, all seven Tennessee Volunteers that were drafted from the baseball roster have indeed signed and move on to their next opportunity, including Jackson Leith, who was the last to do so as he put pen to paper for the Texas Rangers. He joins that organization, as he says, his hometown team. Mm-hmm. And then it was essentially everybody who was drafted, with the exception of the transfer Halverson from Missouri and Chase Burns.
Yes.
You had three signees that were drafted that indeed moved on, but Tennessee gets two really good pitchers that had the opportunity to go pro.
Yeah, and Brady House? Chase Burns is the pitcher.
Yeah.
And
House was the first round draft pick.
Right.
And he signed above slot. I mean, right. He got $5 million from the Nationals.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yes.
And there's no guarantee when you go in the top 10, as we saw with Kumar Rocker.
Yes.
Crazy story that is.
Very much so.
Is he coming back to Vandy?
Doesn't look like it. I think he has said he's not.
Wow. So sit out a year, or what does he do in this year?
He's got a couple of opportunities. He could pitch for an independent league, which is what Luke Hochhaver did when he was drafted and didn't sign with the Dodgers. And interesting that they have the same quote-unquote counselor, whatever you want to call it, advisor, Scott Boras. It's great for the game. And then you also have an opportunity. He could pitch professionally over in Japan.
Wow.
So there are opportunities that he has that we'll see exactly which one he does.
Yeah, and back to the signed drafted players for Tennessee. It doesn't surprise me. Felt like all of those would sign. When Jimmy and I talked to Tony Vitello a couple of weeks ago, or just after the draft, he made it sound like he thought everybody that was drafted would be gone. Thought maybe, you know, Hundley potentially could kind of look at it, but still felt like, you know, a lot of guys, maybe it's time for them to move on to the next stage of their life. And look, it's, even though you hate to lose those guys, they're still kind of dealing with numbers crunch for their roster. So there's other guys kind of waiting to slide in there. And as is typically the case, John, and you, I'm sure you guys will hear it from Tony more and more.
He'll join us Thursday.
There you go. So you feel like, all right, you're losing this, you're losing this, you're losing this. He seemingly, as he was going into this year, and I think the year before, feels very confident about what he's got in larger roles. And you have to trust him based on how things have continued to progress the last couple of years.
Yeah. I think he always has a plan, has a very good idea, and lets competition kind of sort things out for itself.
That's right.
But right now we can tell folks that if they aren't doing it already, they should very much make a trip to 99.1thesportsanimal.com part of their daily routine.
Speaking of a plan, we have a plan to post everything imaginable on UT football right now. 99.1thesportsanimal.com. Some of that is some of the audio is already starting to trickle in. Here's what you do. You go to the website, and then when you get to the tab page, the tabs at the top, click on audio, and then you'll see Vols interviews and more podcasts. You click on there, and then everything that we get from UT press conferences, even if it airs live like today with Josh Heupel, all of the avails we do, players, coaches, all of that is housed right there. So you can get it all anytime on our website. You can also find that Vols interviews and more. Look for that wherever you get your podcast, subscribe to it. And then every time we post new audio there, we got 11 players today, plus Josh Heupel and the two coordinators. Every time we post those avails, they will go to that feed. So you can subscribe to it and it'll pop up automatically for you, or just go to the website every day like you should anyway, because we'll have videos in the video section of all of the players today, plus all the coaches. So tons of content already there and then on the way. So keep checking back and make it a daily stop for you.
That's Vince Ferrara.